Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Yankees and Gravy. We've been away for a little while. Sorry about that. We talk about this being Yankees and Gravy. Usually it is the Yankees, and I try to keep it Yankees as much as possible. But the reason we've been away for a little while is some family stuff, actually. You know, it's crazy. My grandmother is old. She's 94. She can't hear so well. And we took her to a hearing doctor, I guess a hearing doctor, and they said that the hearing was at a point where they didn't feel like a hearing aid was going to be so useful. So what they thought was that basically the hearing aid, her hearing is so far gone that the hearing aid would amplify everything. They'd need such a powerful hearing aid for her to even be effective that it would be so effective that it would pick up like every other sound, cars driving by, as we just had here in at the base of the Triborough Bridge, just south of the South Bronx, where our beloved Yankees play. But either way, she could not hear us. And she took a fall a couple of months ago, and she's not doing so well, to be honest with you. You know, she's 94 years old, and when you fall at 94, it's not the same thing as when you're falling when you're, you know, in your 20s or 30s or whatever, as we all know. But things have been kind of taking a downhill, and, you know, you're 94 years old. That's the kind of the phrase we keep hearing. Hey, listen, she's 94. God bless her. I mean, I know 94 ain't happening for me, but I guess who knows. But either way, what I tried to do was take this microphone that's pretty high-powered and basically bring a laptop to the nursing home where she was and then plug in a set of earphones so that we could basically shut out all the outside noise around her and speak directly into this microphone, and she'd be able to kind of be in the conversation, because part of her falling and everything like that, she was always hard of hearing, but it was just kind of like she was left out of the conversation, had a little bit more of a toll that it was taking on her mental health. I know I'm talking a lot about some personal issues, but I am happy to be back, and I truly, truly do plan on getting the gravy train rolling again and being back with you guys on a regular basis. That's what I keep saying. I look for Yankee podcasts out there, and there are just really no Yankee podcasts that consistently bring you Yankee stuff day in and day out. So hopefully you stuck it through the grandma story, and we're all hoping for the best of grandma and the family there. But let's get on to the Yankees at this point now. So the team as a whole, man, it looked like it was going to be real bad in the beginning. Then it was going to tail off, and you wondered if they were ever going to lose again. And then they just went on a historic slide again. So it's like you're basically looking at what this team is, I guess. They're pretty streaky, obviously, to say the least. It obviously depends upon the teams they're playing as well. They have trouble with those really good pitching teams. You know, some teams can battle. This team seems to have a really tough time with scrappy, good pitching teams. We're going to be dealing with this most of the year, I think. I think this is going to end up being like a 500 type of team, or a little bit north of 500, hopefully, but not your typical 500 team. You're going to see what you saw. You're going to see, you know, when everybody's on all cylinders, Teixeira's tearing the cover off the ball, the arms get a little synergy between them and start shutting people down. Listen, you see what this, you see both ends of the spectrum here. You see what this team can do when they're firing on all cylinders. I said in the beginning of the year, I was like, they can battle for playoff contention in the American League East. And that's the truth. That's what they can do. They showed spurts, I guess, a spurt of playing better than, honestly, to be honest, better than I thought they could. And they were very impressive. But then they shit the bed. I mean, bad. Talk about the team a little bit specifically. When they're on, and their game is obviously, you see how pesky they can be with Ellsbury and Gardner pushing each other at the top. That is a great, great 1-2 to have. Also, you got the power, between Tex and A-Rod primarily, and then, you know, a little bit less than that on a lesser scale, Headley and McCann. Now, the one thing that has impressed me, and even when they were going through their slide, where everybody was like, oh, well, back to earth, back to irrelevance, you know, that was the terms that were being thrown around. I didn't really buy into that, too. I don't think they were as good as they were when they were killing it, and I certainly didn't think they were as bad as they were on that slide, because you could see this team has the ability to win any type of game. They can bang and get on a roll and win 8-2. They can, win 8-7 if they got to kind of, if the offense has to kind of turn it up a little bit when they're on all cylinders. As we know, Ellsbury's out right now, which is a definite problem for a while and doesn't look good for the next few weeks for him. But, you know, that's why I still think they can pitch. I still think that there's some upside to this pitching. You're talking about Big Mike. Big Mike, you know, he sputtered a couple of times, but he's a reliable, reliable pitcher. You know, you got CeCe. I think we'll talk a little bit more about him, but I think he can pull it together. I think you're going to have the clunker every five starts, but I think in general, I think he could pull it together. You know, Eovaldi is a serviceable pitcher, and then you got the guys at the back end who you don't know what you're going to get from, but who's really solid 1-5 in starting pitching. Listen, I kind of probably just painted a little bit more of an optimistic picture than I even think we have on that last little description. I'm trying to look at the upside. Tanaka, we'll talk about him later, but he's scheduled to come back for whatever that's worth. We'll see. But I got a little bit more, I guess, to go on with him later. And Nova's going to come back. Nova, you got to remember, Nova was on his way to being one of the better pitchers in baseball. Top of the rotation type guy. Maybe not one, but maybe two, high three level guy. And he's definitely going to help if he can come back from Tommy John surgery healthy. So help is on the way. Capuano, I don't know. He may be done. It doesn't seem like he could throw the ball harder than his age, in numerically speaking, I'm saying. But I don't know. I do think we definitely need to get another arm. And I think I know, because Cashman said it. If we can stay close, if we can stay relevant, up to and maybe, you know, through the All-Star break, this team shows fight, shows the ability to kind of be in the mix. And honestly, with this division, how could you not be? You got to be bad. This division separated by, I think, four games, when most of the other divisions are separated by, you know, on an average 12 to 13 games. I don't know exactly what, but some of them are like 10, some of them are 17, whatever. But I think you got a team here that can play. I think the upside is a little bit better than I had predicted in the beginning of the year. Let's go, department by department. Hitting, like we talked about, that 1-2 punch at the top is phenomenal. I mean, you can't ask for more than that. And I know these guys aren't huge with the stats, either power or average, but I don't know. These guys are scrappy guys, and the state of pitching and the improvement in pitching in baseball lately, these guys can just hit line drives, be clutch guys. I like their fire. I like their speed. They present a lot of problems for pitchers, catchers, and infields in general when they're on the base paths. So even when they're hitting, you know, legging out grounders, you know, they both kind of can hit to most fields. So you're not, you know, this freaking shift that drives me nuts nowadays. I can't stand it, but it is what it is. Baseball's changing, man, huh? It's crazy. There's a couple of things. I go to do some research on these guys, and I don't care. I'm going to admit it. I'm not really going to conform. I'm just seeing all these, this guy's great. Have you seen his EPI or his ROC or his... I don't care. I'm not gonna go nuts and start learning all these freaking sabermetrics inspired terms on how to judge whether or not somebody's good or not. I'm gonna watch them. I'm gonna look at the regular stuff. I did take on the OPS. All right, you gotta accept the OPS. I still do not know, and honestly, don't want to know what a WAR is. A WAR. I don't know. I also love boxing. Don't like MMA. whatever. This is what happens when you get old, ladies and gentlemen, kids. This is what you got to look forward to. You don't conform to things. Either way. All right, so what are we talking about? We're talking about the offense. Then you get into the power guys. You got to love that. You're getting some good numbers out of A-Rod. You're getting some good numbers out of Teixeira. Average aside, some great numbers out of Teixeira. I mean, this guy, I don't know if it's that he was hurt most of last year, or I don't know where he's just coming in with a just in better shape. He said that before the year started. He said, I'm coming in. I don't know. He started a juice company, or he was, I don't know what he was doing. He was doing something to do with juices. I don't know if he was selling them, drinking them, whatever, but he did say, talk about the no fun diet. He had a new commitment to, you know, to fitness and health and stuff like that. And certain it's not hurting him right now. So I don't know if it's the direct correlation or the direct reason why he's doing so well, but we'll take it. And then Headley and McCann. McCann's coming back a little bit. He's looking good lately, especially on this last 10 days or so. I think he has an RBI and a hitting streak of 9, 10 days, whatever it is. Obviously, you don't expect that to be kept up, but you know, he seems to get like he's getting more comfortable. Headley's an average baseball player, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry, it is what it is. I would prefer to have Prado here, but then you wouldn't have some of the other guys here, you know, Rivaldi or whatever. Who knows? I mean, I said it before, and I'll say it again. Rivaldi guys, I don't know how. I guess it's like a Farnsworth type of situation, but I don't know how you can throw a baseball 99 miles per hour and not be a household name. And there's a reason for it. I don't know what it is, but hopefully Evaldi comes around. But, all right, so Headley, yeah, he's just an average player. It's what he is, and we'll talk about his defense in a little while too. Beltran, it looks like he's starting to get hot. Today, right now, it's Sunday. Saturday's game, he won for us single-handedly. He, you know, hit that go-ahead home run, and he crushed that ball. And he looks like he's getting a little bit more comfortable. This is what happens, guys. You're not going to, I mean, anybody who thinks Beltran's going to go on this crazy run and hit 35 home runs again, you're out of your mind. But this is what you get when you get older. It's not like your skills, you can do things one day, and then as you get older, your skills diminish and you can't do them anymore. That's not how it works, guys. How it works is you get older and you can't do those things as often. You probably would see flashes of greatness till you're 45 years old. And that's the problem. That's what makes the ball player think he can still do it. Because he does do it and he's like, see, I was just in a slump. It has nothing to do with my age. No, buddy. It has to do with your age. That's just how it works. You're a major league professional baseball player, athlete, whatever. You're going to be able to show those flashes. You're going to have those moments in the sun. But the age means you just can't do it as consistently as you used to. And that's just going to happen with Beltran. If he hits 20 home runs, that's looking like what's going to be a steal. He's looked a disaster in the outfield. Starting pitching, we touched on a little bit. It has been underwhelming. It's not been reliable. It's shown flashes of being very, very solid. Big Mike overall is a pretty consistent guy, and we'll take him. Everything below that has been very inconsistent. But at the same time, if we get our act together, I'm not giving up on the fact that we can't, as a team, get some help coming from internally already, because we already have ideally Nova coming. And who knows with Tanaka? Tanaka, who knows? Maybe everybody's so sure that Tanaka's going to have Tommy John. And I guess if I had to bet, I guess that's probably the direction it's going to go. But I don't know. These doctors, I'm betting that they know a little more than me and a little more than you. And they're saying don't have it yet. So if they're saying don't have it yet, that tells me it's not automatic that he's going to have to get it anytime soon. And if that's the case, and he's going to come out there, when he's out there, you got to assume he's going to be Tanaka. And when he's Tanaka, he is a true bona fide number one. And if you got Big Mike is a number two, if you get Nova in at number three, and then Evaldi and whoever else at number four, and then we stick around, Cashman makes a move and gets somebody really solid, another number two or number one around the trade deadline or around the All-Star break. I don't know. I know that's the optimistic side, But, you know, what are you going to do? What are you rooting for if you don't think any of that stuff is possible? That's what you hope for. Relief pitching, bullpen. Obviously, we're talking about the 8th and 9th inning. That is an asset. I mean, this team, if it hits at all and can pitch at all, with that back end of the bullpen, it's all-time great. That's all-time great stuff. You're talking about the 8th and 9th inning guys. That's, I mean, come on. Betances can close on any team. The guy is he struck somebody out with a 99-mile-an-hour fastball yesterday. And when he mixes in that curve, you see those bewildered looks on guys. It's more lethal. Stuff-wise, it's more lethal than Mariano. Now, that's not saying much. Mariano never overwhelmed you with stuff. He overwhelmed you with location. He did have a very live fastball that moved. And, you know, the other thing about Mariano was that lazy-ish delivery from small frame. And then the ball at 95 probably looked more like a 98, 99er when he was in his prime. And that's why it was kind of like sneaky fast. And you combine the location with the accuracy. You combine the movement of the cutter. That's why he was good. But you're talking Betances? He doesn't have to get. There's nothing cute about him. He stands up there. He's freaking blocking out the sunlight with that 6'7" frame. He's staring down at you and just leaning in on you with a 99-mile-an-hour fastball. And then that curveball, very few curveballs move like that. And, you know, as long as he keeps his confidence up and doesn't, you know, the knock on him sometimes is he can start to lose confidence, and then that affects his control. But we haven't seen much of that this year. I mean, he's a beast. And then, you know, you got Miller, who is just a rock back there. Not as electric as Betances, but consistent as all hell. So bullpen looks good. The weirdest and biggest surprise on this team in a negative way has been the defense. I mean, we make some dumb errors. We make some dumb moves. Gregorius is a disaster. Don't know what's going to happen with that. I mean, you can't continue to trot this guy out there. I'm all for giving him a shot and letting him, you know, forget the whole Jeter comparison. We're not, and I'm glad I don't hear much of that. Oh, he's trying to beat Jeter. No, you don't even hear that because he's playing so poorly that you can't even make that excuse. Nobody's asking him to beat Jeter, but we are asking you to be able to throw a ball to first base. Headley has been very suspect as well. And Beltran can't play in the outfield anymore in a big spot. You have to get him out of there. He's a liability. And that's it. I don't know how Stephen Drew, I guess, is saving his life by being at least a reliable fielder because he can't break 200. I used to think like he had something on Joe Girardi as to why he keeps getting all this playing time, but I guess that's it. The fact that the guy can actually pick up a ground ball and throw it to first base keeps him in the lineup. So what you're dealing with is a very uniquely balanced 500-ish, slightly north of 500-ish team. I think that's where it's going to end out. This team is going to end out somewhere between 85, probably right between 83 and 85 wins on a good side, on the upside, 83 to 86 on the upside, and let's say 78 to, you know, 81 or 82 on the low side. I do think what affects us on the higher low side is if we do A, stay relatively healthy, and B, if we're able to get that extra piece as the trade deadline looms. So that is your New York baseball Yankees, as I see it. Again, been away a little while. I'm so happy to be back on the air. I want to give a shout out to a couple of people who have tweeted me and requested. You know, I don't know if I'm talking to myself or I don't know if I'm talking to 100 people out there. I don't know what's going on, but I did get some emails saying that, you know, can you please put out another episode, or we're happy you're back, because, you know, whatever it is. But I am hoping and planning to put these up as much as possible. I want to be consistent at least 2-3 a week. Because basically, like I said, I'm out there looking for them. They're just not out there. and I'm basically filling. I don't have anybody out there doing a daily or multiple times a week Yankee podcast, so I'm doing basically what I wish was out there and what I'd like to hear. All right, what else we got? So I want to talk about A-Rod. And now, guys, please don't take this the wrong way, because I am the first to say that I am way more wrong than I am right. And when I get the chance to gloat, toot my own horn, or act like I was right about something, I'm taking the opportunity, which is the situation that I said with A-Rod. If you go back, I don't know which one it was, but if you go back, it's on record. Talking about A-Rod, I said basically, guys, you're dealing with the leader of this team. Cashman hates him. Girardi probably hates him, although I think Girardi only acts like he hates him because he knows Cashman and Steinbrenner hate him. Steinbrenner hates him. The league hates him. Everybody's just, sports radio hates him. The back pages of the Post, the news, they're all killing him in the beginning of the year. This guy is basically the baseball devil, the Yankee devil. My point was that this guy's been around a while. He's relaxed. He's got nothing to lose. He's the senior member of the Yankees. He's fucking A-Rod, all-world stats. Look at the records and the milestones he's breaking every other day today. How, if you're in that dugout and you're a 22-year-old ball player, 26-year-old ball, how are you not in awe of this guy and what he's accomplished? Throw out the roids. It just in general. Now throw in the fact that he's being a great teammate. He's being a good guy. He's actually probably, and if you know he is because you hear the reports and everybody on his team has always liked him, but he's going up to guys, he's helping them out. And I said, you know, if you're Didi Gregorius and A-Rod comes up to you and notices something in your swing and wants to offer you some info on it, if Didi Gregorius is not a complete jerk-off asshole, he's going to freaking perk up and become a sponge. So my point is this. A-Rod, everything was aligned for A-Rod to be the leader of this team, even if he just performed okay. Not only is he a leader of this team, I guess just by experience and a clubhouse guy, they need him in the lineup. If A-Rod got hurt right now, the Yankees would be in big trouble. When they started the year only playing him and giving him this opportunity because they have to pay him so much money, now it's at the point where they actually need this guy in the lineup because he is a threat. I don't know. I don't know how long this game goes on. If I'm the Yankees, I see their side of it. I see their point. I get it. But at the same time, you're playing him every day. He's part of your team. It's time to embrace this guy and stop giving him hell around every corner. Let the guy play. Make him part of your team. Make him part of your organization. It's almost like he's winning now. And Yankees, you're not beating him. You can't beat him. Just join him. And I did say that in the beginning of the year, so there's one for me, and I'm going to enjoy it because it might be the only one. What else do we want to go into here? Since I've been away, a lot has been made since they announced these retiring of these numbers. I don't know how you guys feel about that. You got to agree with it. You got to agree with the fact that you can't be retiring all these numbers. Now, Francesa, who, you know, I get a lot of heat because I think the guy's brilliant on the radio, and I know a lot of guys hate him, a lot of people hate him, but when you break down the stuff he says, I feel like a lot of trust me, I know he's a, you know, he can be a blowhard. He doesn't listen to his callers. He's just closed-minded. I know the knocks in there mostly true, but when he sits down and starts talking into a microphone, the stuff he says, he's been more right on than most people that I've listened to. And you know, he's been kind of like on a tirade about how we're retiring too many numbers, and I gotta agree. If you think about it, like, go back in history. You know, they're retiring guys like Bernie Williams and guys like Jorge Posada. Go back in history about all the guys on the team that were supporting role guys in the 60s, in the 20s, during those golden era Yankee teams. You know, the underlings to DiMaggio and Ruth and Garrick and Mantle. How many of those guys would have been retired as far as their numbers go if Jorge Posada was the benchmark? I mean, come on. you're going to have an issue. You're legitimately going to eventually have an issue where all the Yankees have to be in the 80s and 90s because of the fact that, you know, there's no numbers available. This is a money-making thing, guys. You know that. They're trying to make money off this, and they're trying to fill the ballparks. They know they don't have a superstar slugger. Teixeira's kind of playing like it. You know, that's the other thing why they should reconcile with A-Rod, because he's making them money now. People come to watch A-Rod play. If you don't believe that, then you're not paying attention. More people are coming to see A-Rod right now than they are coming to see Teixeira. So, you know what? Great. You got to pay the guy a little bit more. Not a little bit, but a lot more than you thought you would. But he's at least doing his part. He's at least filling your ballpark. So let's have this be enough is enough. I want to win a World Series. That's what I want us to do. And that's what I want the focus to be on. Not infighting between the management and its superstar players. Especially the guy who is about to become, by himself, the number two all-time RBI leader. So let's just do it. I'm not defending A-Rod. I know he messed up royally. I know I'm more sympathetic to him than most people are, but let's just move past it. Yeah, you think so, Tom? Yeah, I should probably move past it too, right? All right, so retiring the numbers. You got to slow down with the retiring the numbers. Put all the plaques you want up there. Turn Monument Park into the Yankee Hall of Fame. You know what I mean? Put them in the museum up there that's, you know, got everybody spending, you know, innings at a time in the museum instead of sitting at the freaking in their stands, which is why we lose our home field advantage. Well, we don't have the old ballpark. There was nothing to do. You had to sit in your chair. You had to watch a game. What did that do? That scared the living shit out of the opposition while we're cheering and clapping and we're on top of their heads and this and that. Now everything's comfortable, cushioned, absorbing the sound, more wide open. Now we got 17,000 things to look at and do in the bowels of the stadium instead of actually sitting in your chair and, you know, doing our part is what we should be doing as far as being a home field advantage crowd. There's freaking six different bars. It's like a freaking nightclub district in that place. I don't know. Digressing, but I don't care. It's something I feel strongly about. All the food you go, you can go there. I remember when I went there, and I'm just as guilty as anybody. It's there. You're going to do it. It took me three times going to that stadium before I actually got to sit and watch a game. You know that Steiner Sports, it's a store. It's basically a baseball memorabilia store. But they have the Yankee Museum, which way you can, you know, you could sit in the locker, type in your name, you could look at all the balls, you could look at all the World Series, which is cool. But the stuff that's in that memorabilia store, I walk in there like it's a museum. I just look at that stuff because you got crazy signed stuff by so many people. It's I like that a little bit better than the Yankee Museum, actually, as far as for historic. See what we're talking about here? We're talking about walking around the stadium versus actually being in there. Remember that old stadium, those of you who have been there, where you actually feel the freaking upper deck move? When I used to go there when I was young because I couldn't afford tickets on the bottom level, you're sitting up there, you're hitting home runs, the thing is bouncing. You had those, you know, pussy friends of yours that were actually scared, thought the thing might freaking break down. You laugh at them, and then you try to act like you're scared so that they get more scared. Thing was great, man. You're playing left field. You got right field, left field. You have just massive amounts of humanity raining down on you, yelling at you, acting like complete psychopaths. You think they're not thinking that, you know, whatever's, you know, 50,000 drunk New Yorkers screaming on top of their heads. No, you know, do you think they're not thinking, oh, one of these nut jobs is going to throw something and I'm going to get hit with it? You think that didn't affect the play out there? You didn't think that wasn't an addition, a nice addition to our home field advantage? Nuts, whatever. Let's move on. This one's going a little bit longer, guys, because I've been away a little while. They won't be so long going forward as we, you know, as we keep up the pace and, you know, do at least a couple a week, hopefully. Tanaka, I don't have much to say about Tanaka, but I didn't want to bring him up because, like I said before, this guy, I don't know how he's doing it. I don't know how mentally the guy is going out there and doing this. You got the whole world basically telling him, you are going to get Tommy John surgery. You're going to need Tommy John surgery. How do you go out there and pitch? You know what it takes to throw a ball? What does he throw now? 92 miles an hour? You know what it takes you from your arm, the stress it puts on your arm just to throw one ball at 92 miles an hour? It's like you're going out there, you do your warm-ups, you throw your bullpen, okay, so far so good. Now you got your rehab starts, 3 innings here, 5 innings here, picking it up. To be able to pitch and pitch effectively against the greatest hitters in the world, knowing that there might be your elbow is going to just dismantle at any time. You're just going to who knows what at any time. The world is telling you this. Smart, educated analysts, maybe even some medical people, are telling you that the general manager, when he's interviewed, says, we're not saying he's not going to need it. I know there's a good chance down the road he might. Well, then why don't you freaking do it? What are you going to, you're going to waste the last 2 years of his contract. Now, if he does it, forget it. If you did it in the middle of last year when he first got hurt, you're probably looking at halfway through this year before he comes back. And then you got him all patched up, ready to go. You're not getting anything out of him, basically, except in little spurts. I mean, he won a couple of games, and but now you're just devaluing that contract so much because if everybody's assuming this is eventually going to happen, we're just putting it off. You're just putting off the inevitable, and you're going to pay for it at the tail end of that contract. And what's going to happen? You're going to get nothing out of him. You're going to have this contract be, it's going to make Pavano and Igawa look like a steal. Versus the minute this freaking happened, knock it out, take care of it. Yeah, it sucked because you had to deal with the first half of his first year. But at least now look at Harvey now. You know, Harvey's back. It's freaking Harvey Day, the Dark Knight, the freaking Thor, whatever. If we got to call these guys by superhero names, Thor and freaking the Dark Knight, Syndergaard and the Dark Knight. I mean, not Thor. I want to be able to call Bartolo Colon the Penguin. It should be the way it is. That's it. I mean, what I got to freaking, with Yankees, with over 100-year-old franchise, we're trying to freaking, restore pride to us. And across town, you got these nut jobs. Everybody's a superhero. I don't know. It just bothers the hell out of me. You know what also bothers me right now? Again, we're going into gravy here. These Knicks. Are you kidding me? Like, do you? We have not suffered enough as Knicks fans. If you're a Knicks fan, you got to watch. Bad move after bad move get made. You got to watch this franchise turn Phil Jackson into a basketball moron. I mean, I'm speaking, pessimistically, of course, but just the way it's looking. Phil Jackson, the guy who could do no wrong. And everybody, you know what? Screw that too. Are you kidding me? Like, Phil Jackson is revered as one of the greatest coaches of all time. He had freaking Jordan and Pippen on one of his teams, and he had Shaq and Kobe on the other one of his teams. How is this guy a freaking basketball genius? So you know what? Let's just take him and his triangle offense, and let's give him the whole freaking keys to the franchise. I'm digressing off of my digression is what I'm doing right now. Now the Knicks, so they're making every bad move. It seems like, I don't remember the championship. It was before my time, and I'm old as hell. So we're going through all this, the Marbury crap, the Isaiah Thomas crap. You realize the coaches we turned into garbage? We had, if you look at the coaches that we had, we had Rick Pitino, we had Pat Riley, and Jeff Van Gundy. Now, those two you don't say anything about because they actually produced for us. During the dark days, you had Lenny Wilkins. You had Larry Brown. Don Nelson. You had all these guys. Some of the greatest coaching names in history. It's a joke. They were all bums when they were here. You know what I mean? It's almost like when you bring those names up, they don't talk about the Knicks stuff. Now top it all off. This is what I really wanted to get to. J.R. Smith has been a jerk off since the day he joined the team. He actually had that 1 year, you know, when he did good and he was like the sixth man of the year. And, you know, since he hit that Boston Celtic in the head with that elbow, has just digressed into a freaking realm of jerk offness that you can't top. Between untying people's sneakers, between tweeting dumb stuff, between getting busted for drugs. And it seemed like, Shumpert has been his little cohort, like his little partner in crime. We got rid of these guys, I know, mostly because of money, but in the case of JR especially, because of just jerk-offness. Just, this is a bad attitude, you're not going to win with a guy like this, and, you know, we don't get rid of them. We send them to basketball paradise. We send them to LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers, where LeBron says, you know, you're basically saying this is the god of basketball right now. He's saying, he just said, he's like, bring him here, I'll fix him. He's not screwing up under me. And he's not going to screw up under him, because LeBron's, he's finally turned himself into a leader. And now we got to watch this crap. One man's trash and there's another man's treasure. We got to watch J.R. Smith's mom rapping like Drake. Started from the bottom, now we're here. Obviously meaning bottom, meaning the Knicks. Having these guys celebrate. This is thrown in our face every day. We could not send these guys to freaking Milwaukee or freaking the CBA somewhere. Couldn't we had to just hand deliver them a trip to the NBA Finals. You know they're talented. You know these guys are good players. And with the right leadership, they're going to turn things around. And they've been very useful. They've done a great job. I congratulate these guys because I never like to see people fail. Well, I guess that's not true. But, you know, I don't want to hate on them. But, oh, I got to watch this. I got to watch their celebrations, their freaking, you know, selfies on TV. The selfies, J.R. Smith stopping press conferences to do selfies and I can't take it or whatever. All right, so going back to Tanaka. Hopefully we do the right thing. Hopefully this guy miraculously heals from this tear in his elbow, but we'll see. Seems like the inevitable seems to be he's going to need Tommy John surgery. And if Cashman's saying it, you know, we're not expecting he won't ever need it, but well, then when are you going to do it? What are you going to do it when now you've gotten nothing out of him and you're going to do it when he's only got 2 years left and you're going to like give him up for Tommy John on the last 2 years of anything that he can produce for you? Or the last 2 years of you having control of him at all makes no sense whatsoever. But again, I'm a jerk off with a microphone and a laptop, and these guys are the greatest minds in baseball and the highest paid medical professionals there are, so I guess you got to go with them. What the hell do I know? All right, let's speed things up here. Ellsbury, looks like he's going to be gone for most of, if not all of, June or more. This was the thing with this guy. This was a little bit of a knock on him. Very dynamic baseball player when he's healthy. There always was. You know, my friends in Boston, they would always call me, yeah, congratulations, you got the Ellsbury Doughboy, because he's soft, like the Pillsbury Doughboy. Haha, very funny. But he's a very good, dynamic, all-around baseball player. I was disappointed when we basically got rid of Curtis Grandison for him. Who's better? Like, you know, I was just thinking, like, who's better to have, Grandison and Cano or Ellsbury? And this is what you're dealing with. But having seen him play on a day-to-day basis, he's got an explosiveness and a consistency and a defensive mindset and an ability that Grandison just doesn't have. Grandison, I was more or less, you know, upset about losing the 30 to 40 home runs that you lose off Grandison. But again, you know, that's Grandison Grandison has a Yankee Stadium swing. Grandison is not, probably not as good as an all-around baseball player as Jacoby Ellsbury. But the softness thing did come into play. We dodged that bullet last year and the start of this year. It seems like now he might be hurting. He's in a cast. He's got a sprained knee. And he won't be doing anything for a little while. And he probably will be out all of June. Hopefully he comes back at that point. Hopefully they don't rush him too. That's going to do a lot of things. It's going to make us a worse of a team. We're definitely a worse team without Ellsbury. And it's going to put more pressure on Gardner. You know what I mean? That was a great 1-2 punch. It was a luxury. You know what I mean? So did we need it? Need it? You got to say, you know, it's more of a luxury than a necessity to have two kind of good average guys, fiery guys, fast guys at the top of the lineup. But now it's all on Gardner now, which, you know, not the worst thing in the world. I wanted to talk about CC Sabathia. He seems like he's getting it a little bit. He seems like he's starting to figure this thing out. I think what you're going to deal with is this is going to be the crucial transition year. If he can put it together and get himself like, you know, if he can get like a somewhat close to 500-ish record, if he can keep an ERA, you know, late threes, maybe early fours, and stay healthy the whole year, you may be looking at a Pettit type. Now, they're saying Pettit has been working with him. And I love Pettit. I think that's great news. Pettit is one of my all-time favorite Yankees. You got to remember, there's only one Andy Pettit. Andy Pettit never had the skill set of a CC Sabathia. And that's where we may be in a little bit of trouble. Pettit has always had the ability to improvise. He always had to have the ability to battle. CC was more of a dominant force. And CC was just, talent was head above most pitchers during his prime years. So it's going to be a little harder for him to be able to just be a heart and soul guy. You know what I mean? And that's what Pettit was. I don't care what condition he was in. I don't care what time of year it was. And I didn't care how old he was. I can truly honestly say that in a big game, I wouldn't want anybody other than Pettit pitching. And that's when CC Sabathia was in his prime. CC I think he's got the heart. I think he's got the desire. And I think he is a battler. But I just don't think he has the stones of a Pettit. You know what I mean? But you hope for the best. You got Pettit working with him. So that's great. And, you know, they said Pettit spoke recently. And he said when he got hurt, you know, Pettit just was going to pitch. And Pettit eventually did get Tommy John surgery. Oh, I actually shouldn't say that. I'm not sure if he did or not. I'm not going to make shit up. But I think he had surgery on his elbow. And he's the guy that would just pitch. And he pitched all year with a disastrous elbow. And he knew he was going to get surgery after the year. And during that year, he's like, well, I'm not coming out of the game. I'm just going to continue to pitch. And that he said that's what taught him to go, because when he came up, he was the mid-90s guy. Never an overpowering guy, but, you know, he was like the 94, 95-mile-an-hour guy. But then when he had to kind of live in that 89 to 91 mile-per-hour range as far as velocity goes, he did learn to pitch. And he learned how to pitch. He cites that one year when he was hurt where he had to start figuring stuff out. And it's probably a very difficult thing to do. First, you have to kind of admit, you have to kind of, it's like the stages of death. You have to admit that you have the problem. You have to admit that you can't do what you used to do. And it seems like CC's there, and he's taken this year, and he's trying to figure it out with the help of the guy who I think is the best in the business in that regard, Andy Pettit. So I think he's going to be in good shape. I think he's going to come around, and then what he's going to learn how to do, if things go well, he's going to learn how to give you those quality starts day in and day out. You're talking 7 innings. You're talking 3 runs. You're talking, you know, 5-6 strikeouts. And, you know, it depends. Some days he's going to be a 5-inning guy. Some days he's going to be a 7 or 8-inning guy. I also do think you're going to get the clunker. CC, even when he was on, he still was definitely susceptible to that. You know, they call it that one big inning. I call it the one big game, where he can go 4 or 5 starts and just kind of be lights out. And then there's just day he just doesn't have it. And they get him for 8 or 9. And I think that's never going to stop. I think he's always going to have that. So that'll be CC. But the optimist in me does think he's going to figure out that, you know, how to become that heart and soul slash, you know, crafty veteran rather than that powerful guy. It's looking like he's starting to make strides at getting there. What else did I want to talk about? I wanted to talk about some of the prospects, I guess, in Yankee land. And this is what we all hope for. When we talk about the 96 to 2002, whatever you want to end cap that great era, that it's not very likely you'll see again anytime soon. But when we did it, and you know we did it, and we talk about it now more than ever because of all these guys that were retiring these numbers, it was done from within. You know what I mean? It was done. The farm system did it. Started with Bernie and then went up through Jeter, Mariano, Jorge, and some other guys that we picked up free agency along the way, Pettit. And that was what it was. So you're always looking, and that's one thing I've always been looking for, is like, how is our farm system doing? Is that next wave kind of coming up? Who's this guy? I don't even freaking forgot his name. The guy they called up right now. He's doing pretty well. It seems as though, I'm going to get his name just so I don't sound like a complete moron on my podcast. No, I'm not. His computer's going slow. Heathcock or something like that? Is that what it is? What I think this guy is, I don't think he's necessarily an over-the-top prospect. I think he's more of like a guy who fits a need. I think he was 2 years ago. He did get hurt a little bit. He looked like he was going to be a good power guy. Maybe not the best average guy. But a decent option in the outfield and a 30 to 35 home run guy at Yankee Stadium. I think he's lost some skill with a couple of surgeries that he's had since he was 19 or 20. And I think right now he's going to be a good baseball player. I think you got a guy who has the possibility of being a very serviceable guy. They say he still has good, strong power in the alley, so he could hit some gappers and some doubles. A lot of those used to be home runs. Now they're more like kind of gappers and line drives and stuff like that. But I don't think he's like one of the guys who they're thinking of that's going to be able to like be a real huge difference maker. One guy they do think is going to be a huge difference maker is Luis Severino. They just promoted him actually to AAA. The guy seems to just a lot of like Mariano-ish type movement on his fastball. He lives in that 95-96 area. It seems to move like if you're facing the batter, like left to right. So in on righties and away to lefties. Right-handed guy, and looks to be a guy who's an up-and-comer who is they put him along mid-season. They upped him, so and we may need some help, and they may be trying to see what this kid's made up. So if they move him to AAA June 1st, there's a good chance that they're kind of looking at him to maybe be that guy that they pick up at the end of the year, kind of have him be patient, hopefully. The other guy that you keep hearing about is this guy Aaron Judge. And a lot of what you're hearing about him is because he's freaking a monster. He's like 6'7", 230, 240 or something like that. The name they keep throwing out there is Giancarlo Stanton because he kind of looks like him in stature. As of now, though, this is a guy who's decent in the field, very good arm. And surprisingly enough, he's more of like a pure hitter, it seems like. Now, that they think that this guy is going to be able to develop more power. He's going to be able to, as he matures with some higher-level coaching, they're going to be able to get 30 home runs out of him. So you take that into consideration and decent enough in defense. At defense, you know, could be ready for next year. He's in AA right now. They'll probably get promoted sometime before the end of this year as well to AAA. And it looks like he'll probably be on the expanded roster at the end of this year. And then next year, maybe start out in AAA and then be like the first call-up. You got another guy here. What's his name? Greg Bird. Greg Bird is another big dude, first baseman. Now, I don't know. This guy seems to be a little less electric of a player. He's a home run guy, if anything. And he is a home run guy. I'm not going to say if anything. He doesn't seem to be the best average guy. He's looking like a sub 250 guy as far as average goes. On a good note, though, he does seem to have a good eye. He's patient. So a lot of those years, that was like a lot of Giambi at the end of the career. Teixeira, too, a little bit. They think he's not hitting right now. He's hurt right now, actually, too. So he's a couple of injuries they think are affecting him, but he's shown the ability to hit 30-plus home runs. He's not a potential home run guy. He's a legitimate home run guy who could hit more. But he doesn't have great plate coverage, and he doesn't have he's got a little bit of a long swing, they say, so that when he can strike out a lot, basically. But he does have a great eye. He does walk. He's patient. He waits for his pitch. And they say that should give him the opportunity to have a pretty good on-base percentage to make up for any lack of average that he has. In the field, he's okay. And, maybe average to slightly below average in the field. No speed whatsoever. Does not have any speed. Can't run. Is not helping you at all in the base paths. They seem to be, he's probably, if Teixeira... He's a little older than the other guys, too, I think. If Teixeira wasn't in the mix and Teixeira wasn't a, top two, three or four first baseman in baseball, this guy probably may even be on the team already. But, he's getting blocked. He's got the Teixeira block. Now, I recently saw they're talking about this shortstop, Jorge Mateo. Now, obviously, he's young because if he was at all ready to be playing, he'd be playing now because we have nothing at shortstop right now, or second base for that matter. But they like this kid. He can bang. He's not necessarily a home run threat, but he hits line drives. He's got some pop in his bat. Maybe like potentially like a Nunez at bat, but not necessarily a home run guy, but a blazing speed guy and a good arm and a great fielder. Most impressively on the range aspect of it. He's 19 years old, though. You know what I mean? So they're projecting him maybe 2017 or 18 if everything goes well. But those, and then you got the other guys, you got Ref Snyder. The Ref Snyder kid seems to be, and I was a proponent of him for a while, but he seems to not be able to field at a major league level yet. They say he can bang, he could hit pretty good, but he just not, as far as fielding goes, he's not on the fielding level where you'd want it to be. Either way, that's the podcast for today. This was a long, we're pushing an hour now. I like to try to keep them in that 30 minute range, but it's been a minute. It's been a while. I'm going to try to be more consistent with this. As I said again, please share this as much as possible, because again, I don't know. If you know of anybody who's doing a 2 to 3 day a week Yankees and Gravy podcast, a Yankee podcast, I'd love to hear it. Tell me, because I want to listen to them. But that's not out there, I don't think. So here I am. And again, cut me some slack. I am not at all in any way, shape, or form a professional broadcaster. Big shock. And doing my best and just trying to talk a little Yankee baseball with you guys and eventually have it be interactive. If you have any comments or anything, yankeesandgravy@gmail.com. I will mention whatever you send me on the podcast. Actually, it's Yankee Gravy on Facebook. So if you search Yankee Gravy, I'm going with the friend page still. I know you're supposed to have the fan page if you're like a business or an entertainment or whatever, but I like to be able to request friends still until I get big. I do have a Yankees and Gravy fan page, but it's kind of dormant right now until I have a little bit of a following to be able to switch over. And at Yankees and Gravy on Twitter. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I hope you stick around. And it's up to me now to prove this consistency that I'm promising you in the wake of getting my microphone back. We'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks again for listening.